Hey, and welcome to What's on Draft. We are here recording a new episode. I'm right over really early in the morning, and Cole is about to wrap it up, I guess, over there in Seattle, and we are without Mark Withington. He couldn't be with us today. We're going to wrap up a little bit of how we've seen the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament and go through some guys. But first, we have news with Robert Williams coming back to school for a second sophomore year. A bit of a surprising development for him after, like, since they are going to have the two bigs that started over him coming over again, like Tony Trochamorelos and Tyler Davis. And he's going to probably end up playing a bit of the three, but probably mostly the four, especially with DJ Hawk coming back from an injury. And I don't really know if it's the best situation for him to develop. Honestly, they don't really have any playmaking guards over there or anybody that can actually get the best out of him, and he's probably not going to play with enough spacing. But he sounded like he didn't really feel ready for the NBA and he wanted more time. And even somebody, I think, reported that he wanted to get a shot at the number one pick at the NBA. I don't really know how your feelings on this, Cole, or what you think about it, but like, it seems like a tricky and risky move for him, right? Like, with the class of bigs we have this year and who is coming over to kind of conquer the top of the draft next year.
Yeah, I think that's the main takeaway, is he has a legit chance in this class to be maybe the second big off the board after Lauri Markkanen, I'm guessing just by a GM stance. And, you know, there's a really big infiltration of bigs coming next year. We have, you know, Ayton, Bamba, and Wendell Carter, who are probably all projected to go ahead of him. And that's just bigs. So you factor in Michael Porter and then other elite prospects. And, I mean, this class was a very good opportunity for him to go lottery. And just from a monetary standpoint, when you have a high percentage chance of going lottery and you're a big, you might want to take that opportunity. I'm not going to sit here and kill the kid. I mean, if he wants to go back to school, best to him. But it just seems like some of the situations that this happens in doesn't end well for the player. Maybe like they get over-scrutinized their second year coming back. And like you said, the situation isn't really ideal for him with the two bigs already existing there. So it's an interesting environment. I'm going to be interested to see how it plays out for sure.
Yeah, it's not like either one of those bigs are seniors. Like, I think Trochamorelos is a junior, and I think Tyler Davis is a sophomore or something like that. So it's like they're going to be there at least for another year. And I guess, like, eventually they could move him a little bit more towards the five if they get, like, I mean, just to share the minutes and all that. But, like, he's not ideal spacing-wise regardless. I like DJ Hawk. I like his playmaking ability, but they could really use another guard. Just to go through a little bit of the list, like, we have several other guys that are in. LJ Peak from Georgetown is in for goods. Yabun Evans from Oklahoma State as well. Tyler Lydon, Markel Fultz, we knew about him. And then some guys have declared without an agent. Omar Yurseven from Turkey and NC State. I don't really know if he's going to go in for sure. Marcus Keane, the leading scorer of the NCAA, the little guard from Central Michigan. And then Kyle Kuzma from Utah. Jared Allen from Texas, that could be the most interesting name of all these ones, I guess. Like, I don't really know if he's going to get any first round promise or anything like that, but I will guess that he's going to get some interest and probably stay in just because the lack of defensive bigs in this class, like we've been talking about, and with Williams coming back, like there is a void there that he can fill, I guess. Like, that could be a possibility this year, right?
Yeah, and he has a decent chance to go top 20 too, and at least stay in long enough to get better intel. You know, and just ride this out a little bit. Because right now we're looking at Lauri Markkanen as a surefire lottery pick. And if Zach Collins comes out, he can potentially be a later half of the lottery pick. But after that, like, there's not a whole lot there. Like, Bam Adebayo, Ivan Rabb, those guys are more like late firsts, early seconds. So, and we don't even know if they're going to come out. I'm sure Bam will, but we'll see in regards to Ivan Rabb. But for the most part, the takeaway is, like, we could see really one big go in the lottery now. Like, one legit, maybe, if you view Lowry as a five, I think he's a situational 4 and 5, but just fives only. He could be the only guy. And
yeah,
it feels like the only
five that could be, like, a real defensive presence at some point is Zach Collins. Like, it doesn't feel like there is any other name out there. Maybe Jared Allen, if he develops correctly, and we'll see if he stays in. But, like, those are the only two premium, like, at least from the physical standpoint and the measurements that they have, the total package, or some of the package at least, in terms of being able to be like a defensive presence from the five position at Dallas level. And those two are basically everything there is. So it's not a good year to have those type of needs from the NBA standpoint, right? Like, that's a bit of a tricky proposition as of now.
Yeah, we've been on this bandwagon for the entire time. Yeah. It's like, we don't want to invest high capital in it. Maybe Justin Patton goes lottery just with the offensive upside, but we're kind of soured on him a little bit. But maybe NBA executives don't feel the same. But Let's move into the premier matchup from the last weekend. We want to talk mostly tournament today. We're going to go over Josh Jackson, Miles Bridges to start, move into guys like Villanova, Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges pretty quickly, and then talk about some guys we haven't talked about yet, like Sendarius Thornwell of South Carolina. He played against Duke and Marquette and was pretty fantastic. So we're going to go over some broad categories, some broad guys that we haven't talked about yet, and then fixate a little bit more on this first matchup. So first of all, let's start. I think this is the most valuable tape maybe for any prospects we've had all year in terms of a head-to-head matchup. So take me through your thoughts on Josh Jackson.
Yeah, it was a bit weird because I was not expecting this to happen. Like, I had Miami beating Michigan State, so it was a bit confusing to get this matchup.
Too,
I was not expecting it at all. So then we got it, and it was pretty fantastic, actually. Like, we had them going head-to-head, and until the second half, the game was pretty close. So it was kind of like a perfect environment for them to showcase their abilities. I think it was interesting to see, and I think some people have actually used this to feel a bit more confident about both Jackson and Bridges' chances of scoring against other opposition than in the case of Jackson bigs and in the case of Bridges' small guys. I think for Jackson, it was interesting to see him getting to work sometimes in the post and getting like his shot off easily with turnaround jumpers and things like that. And even like he has some step back threes and stuff like that against Bridges. Like, if he's hitting deuce, he's really difficult to stop regardless. But like, the lack of length from Bridges was evident at some point during deuce post-ups and when Jackson could just turn around and hit the jumper. And also, like, I thought it was really intriguing to see Bridges, and it's something that I have been looking through with his tape, like his ability to finish at times. I think he has this, like, he obviously has the explosive verticality to hang in midair and the strength to actually battle through guys and finish through contact. So it's like he just lacks sometimes the finesse, but like he's okay some extended finishes and things like that that you see at times with Tatum. He has the actual like right timing to get to the rim because at times he lacks that of 1 foot leaping ability, but when he gets the right time and everything, he's able to extend and get some skill finishes. I saw that from Bridges. I was not expecting that much. And then we saw some of the lackluster ability he has in terms of like getting his own shot or getting through the rim or getting like in terms of one-on-one scoring ability. I think he lacks some in-between game in terms of creating his own points, Bridges. But like, it was not a playmaking show from either one of them. It was more like going at each other, getting to score, than just creating for their teammates. But at one point, that was the difference for the game as well, because Michigan State, obviously, outside of Bridges, really lack anybody that could actually score anything. Like, the backcourt was pretty mediocre during that game, other than Cassius Winston from the bench, which was like to be expected because he's been on fire since midseason in terms of creating for the rest of the team.
Yeah, I thought Jackson showed a little bit more in isolation that we've seen from him. And like you touched on the post, so he gave us two avenues to where he could score in isolation setting. He couldn't really beat Bridges off the dribble. Like, he only beat him once on that late game closeout when Bridges was already going pretty much full speed at him, and that's when Jackson had that blow-by dunk. But for the most part, Jackson had to settle for step-backs. I thought they were the most impressive step-backs he's had this year. He had a couple against Kentucky that were nice, but these were more like isolation, like step-back threes, like a couple of those, and like, they look pretty translatable. I've always thought he looks more comfortable shooting off the dribble. It's not supported by the numbers this year, but as far as his comfort level on the court, it just seems like that. But yeah, scoring the post, he showed us a little bit more diversity instead of just the pick and pops. Like, they use him as the screener. He usually pops into space and then blows by either fours or, you know, on closeouts or stuff like that. So we saw more of like, he wasn't just scoring on the weave in this game. It was more like translatable scoring ability. But I do think there are first step issues with him. Like, he didn't have that quick ability just to blow by Bridges most of the time. And that's something I kind of been looking for from him as far as from good matchups versus especially athletic wings. And Bridges isn't great laterally. He's pretty good compared to what Jackson's faced. So I think that might be a little bit of a concern. And on the other side of the ball with Bridges on offense, I really like the shooting on the move, continuing to do that. Saw him shoot off the dribble a couple times, shoot quickly running off like a pin down. He's been really good about that all year, showing that versatility off the shot. He got to the basket. He beat Jackson off the dribble a couple times, actually, late in the game especially. He rejected one screen and then blew by Jackson. Thought that was really impressive. Showed a little bit of a quick crossover. So I really think that maybe for Jackson, it illuminated a little bit more of his ceiling creation-wise at the next level from a self-creation standpoint. But we also saw, conversely, maybe he doesn't have that elite lateral agility like maybe an Andre Iguodala has athletically. He might just be a tier down. And for him, I don't see him as an elite defensive prospect, but a really good one. But and for Bridges, conversely, I think that he really helped himself. He did some more dribble moves. He beat guys, like you said, body control, finishing, got by Jackson in creation settings. So overall, I think both guys really helped themselves in this game.
Yeah, in terms of, like, I really like Bridges' ability off ball. Like, he really goes through the screens and go through everything, like, fights hard to get his shot off, and he knows where to go as well. Like, he's following the offensive setting. Like, you see him going and going around, like, going through pin downs and getting off to one side of the floor and things like that. And he knows how to get that, and he has really good mechanics when he's getting his shot off that way. I think off, like, on ball, when he has to, like, just go through, either he's going through and trying to go all the way to the basket, or he's not going to just pull up from mid-range. I don't think he has that in his pocket just yet. But, like, I think, like, he was encouraging, like you said, especially his ability to blow by guys. I think if he's able to do that, like, he's going to be more workable as a three. But, like, as well, I think, like, the defensive problems are there at Santa at points. Like, I'm not really confident on him guarding, like, full-time perimeter players. I think he's better off, like, we discussed this a little bit, like, better off in a safety role where he can influence the game with his leaping ability and, like, verticality. I think he showcased the lack of length, though, against Josh in the post. And also Josh, like, I know people were probably not looking towards that as his main tool, because people want to see him as, like, as on-ball driver that can actually beat down somebody of the dribble. But, like, he showcased that he can at least has, like, some type of semblance of a post game to score against the smaller guys if you are storing him at the three. Like, I think that's a possibility for him to get his shot off from mid-range. I think that could be workable. Like, I know, like, it's not the most efficient shot in the world, but, like, it's a venue for him to get something going, at least, if he's not going to get to work in isolations. So, like, that, there is something there. I agree defensively, like, he was a bit disappointing, but, like, I think there is a mix of two things. Like, first, strength-wise, Bridges is much ahead of him, and I don't really know if he's going to be able to put enough weight to be able to battle those guys eventually. And also, like, he ends up, like, getting beat at times. Like, I will share the same thought about Mikal Bridges, just because he's following the ball when the guys are, like, instead of following the feet or following the footwork, he gets a bit like tricked by the ball and by fakes. I think that happened, like, in one of the situations we were talking about when he got beaten by Bridges and all the way to the rim. I think that was a semi crossover on the left side, I guess, like on the corner when Bridges went all the way to the rim. And I think he was, like, doing that. I think at times he tries a bit too hard to follow the ball and just go for the deflection, or try to get too much into the other guy's body and try to bother. And that's a mistake with the press and, like, with the way he defends that I think he will have to correct regardless at the next level. So I think there is still something workable there. I don't know if I want to get already the take that he lacks agility or lateral agility to be able to keep up with elite guys. I mean, with the elite of the elite guys, everybody does. If you are going to put him against, like, elite guards or elite athletes at that position, that's going to be a problem regardless. But, like, I don't know if I'm going to take that take out just yet. Like, I think there are some workable issues he has that I've seen all year long in terms of, like just pressing a bit hard and just getting beaten out of that. I don't know what you think about it.
Good observation. I'm shedding light on the fact that I just don't think he's elite there. I agree with you. I think he's still a plus defender, of course. He's got good feet, and I think the issues you brought up are really good. And I just think that I've compared him to Iguodala, and I just don't think he has that kind of explosiveness. I went back and watched some Iguodala, like, his rookie year and stuff like that, and he was just quicker, and he was more athletic at this juncture, more developed. So I'm not sure if that's a fair comparison at this juncture. I just wanted to shed light on the fact that maybe he's not elite. But what, like you said about Bridges, we're projecting him, I think both of us are, to the four at the NBA level.
Yeah.
And to showcase the ball skills he did, and even in the first round too, like, he ran a pick and roll. He's just shown a lot of ball skills for when you project him to big space that I think will translate. I don't think they're, like, legitimate for, like, maybe a wing most of the time. He's not going to beat most wings off the dribble in an isolation setting. But when you start, like, getting him on the move, if he's catching, like, on a pick and pop, he can blow by guys. If he's showing that first step, showing that ability to finish, like, there's just a projectable skill set with him if you project him the right way. It's just if he will be used that way is what we are concerned about.
Yeah, he can for sure work out short rolls or closeouts or things like that, right? Like, he was completely... Yeah, like, when you are not closing out hard on him, he's going to beat you to the ring for sure, and he's going to hard. So that's a good one. Like, he's not going to just go and settle for a mid-ranger. Like, he tends to just go all the way. That's something I like. And also, like you said, like, the first round was really impressive for me because I've been seeing this trend with him, but, like, I think he's in a really good place in terms of confidence and IQ, like, deciding when to attack, when to, look for his own scoring, when to actually just, like, move the ball a little bit more. I think that's really something really difficult to get. And even with guys, like, with Dirk Nowitzki and other, like, guys, like, they didn't even get that to the latter part of their careers. Like, I think, I'm not saying that Bridges has that completely, like, locked down, but, like, he shows, like, really good feel and, like, a really good feel for the clock, the game, like, when is the right time for him to actually hunt his own scoring and against which guys. I think that's really impressive. Like, we'll talk about that with Thornwell, but, like, it's something that even, like, I think you don't develop until you get to be a senior. And I was really impressed with that by Bridges this year.
Yeah, his youth and, like, his role. Like, we talked about, he's not going to be a primary creator at the next level. He's going to be more of a secondary guy. And if he's already showing awareness and some aggression to pick his spots, when he's going to pass, when he's going to score, and just playing, like, the field game, that's impressive. And that's, like, something that not a lot of young guys will bring to a secondary level like that.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to go through, like, the issues in that regard in terms of creation that we saw from the Villanova guys, especially. I mean, you are not going to, like, fall Bridges too much because his role hasn't been that one either way, so it's not like we were going to get that, especially in a close game in the tournament and all that. But, like, I think with Hart, I was kind of disappointed. I know the game was a bit more ISO heavy either way, like, especially from him and DiVincenzo, but, like, it was, like, difficult to see him creating anything other than just trying to, like, bulldoze his way to the rim and get anything off that he could. Like, he lacks a little bit of explosiveness, so he couldn't really get over guys, but, like, he tried to just drop something, like, step back things and just, like, he got a few buckets down there, couldn't do it by the end of the game, but, like, I think people were a little bit underwhelmed with his showcase there, but, like, I think nobody was really projecting Hart as a one-on-one creator at the next level, more of a situational playmaker, right? Like, that's, I don't really know, that's something used to be too worried about. It was more, I think, the lack of, like, team play from Villanova and the lack of, like, actually threaded settings, like, in terms of, like, creating of the pick and roll. I counted, like, three or four, and most of them were with DiVincenzo, and, like, not many others. Like, the screening from the bigs, especially from Chris Jenkins, was atrocious in this game. Like, I was, like, completely banging my head against the table. Like, just, like, I didn't even know how he was expecting to get the ball in good situations for pick and pops with the way he screened for his guards. Like, it was just really frustrating to watch, and especially frustrating to watch how Villanova really didn't really push the tempo other than when they got deflections out of the press to be able to actually showcase the difference they had in terms of athletic ability with Wisconsin. But, like, just to focus a little bit more on Hart, what were your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, we knew all along the lack of burst and really explosion as a finisher. He's never really had those qualities. That's why people have him outside the top 30, because he's not that athletic. But he's always a guy that's been reliant on his body at the college level to create separation. And he can run through guys, he can finish through contact. And I actually think that might translate okay at the NBA level as far as finishing through contact.
Yeah, the finish through contact was, the contact thing was okay in this game, I thought.
Yeah, his body control is okay. Like, he got killed a little bit at the end because Nigel Hayes got on him, and Nigel is a bull. Like, whatever you think about Nigel Hayes, like, he's almost 6'8", 7'3", wingspan, and he's hard to move. Like, he moves guys inside pretty easily, and Hart's is not going to, like, be able to run through him. And that's a difficult matchup. I just don't think he's going to face a lot of wings at the NBA level that are, like, more like fours. You know what I mean? Especially if he's, like, a reserve. He's not going to face those guys that completely he can't move at all and he can't finish through. So there are a couple drives where you're like, okay, I can see the limitations, but we already knew the limitations. And, like, the same kind of held true for Bridges. Like, he just didn't do anything, really, offensively. He's just not involved. He's not aggressive. And defensively, this is why I've kind of been harping on the distinction between him and OG Anunoby all year, just because you saw how easily Hat moved him on the block. Hayes did the same at times. He just doesn't have the frame, really, to body those bigger fours. I think he's more of a 1-3 defender, and he can defend some fours, but the guys that can really bully him and move him inside, like, he's not going to be able to guard those guys.
Yeah, he felt a little bit weak, like you said, and especially, like, I think he got tricked. Like, it's more difficult to see this, because he was defending, like, they were pressing full court at times and, like, half court for most of the game. And it's much more difficult if you are, like, jumping around and trying to press the guy and just trying to get a deflection to be able to stay on your feet and actually stay sound and don't get beaten off the dribble or getting beaten to your spots. Like, that's something that I think we'll touch whenever we talk about Isaac and the game against Xavier. But, like, it's a bit more difficult to do all that, and not many teams in the NBA use that type of press regardless, but like, I think he saw a little bit of balance issues, or that's what I thought at least, at times, and that was a bit concerning. And like you said, that the last play where Hayes scored, like, he was completely tricked there by use the way he used his body to fake the dribble and all that. And I think like the part on offense where he's not a guy that is going to use the ball that much and just be a complete role player, like, that's something that we're expecting. He had like some more issues than I thought before in terms of finishing when he decided to go to the basket. It wasn't like as I think he did often in this game, but it happened a couple times and he couldn't really get through the bigs from Wisconsin. And just to piggyback a little bit on Hart, like, I thought the thing that happened with him, other than Hayes bodying him up, like, he got a little bit predictable. Like, all his dribbles were the same exactly. Like, he was going to the left, just like getting to the rim and getting like body control, going a little bit down and trying to like just throw something at the rim. And like, all the dribbles, if you watch them, like, were the same exact moves. And like, he just got a little bit predictable towards the end of the game. And I think just Wisconsin adjusted there, because he could, like, the first two or three dribbles, he actually scored off those. But like, by the end, he was just not, like, he couldn't trick anybody with that anymore.
Yeah, and I definitely noticed that for Bridges too. Like, he didn't really have a plan when he drove to the hoop. Like, he was just going. Like, there's one time where the Wisconsin, I think it was a forward, rotated over from the weak side and blocked him, and Bridges had no idea he was there. He never looked. It was basically, he was going to the rim the entire time, and he wasn't going to change. There was no, like, changing in the air. There was no adjustment. It was basically just, I got the ball, I'm going to go try to finish through traffic, and that just never works that well. For Hart, I definitely agree. Hart definitely seemed more predictable than he usually does. I feel like he at least can change speeds a little bit. I mean, it doesn't really work that well because he doesn't really shift that well. But he usually can, like, step around guys a little bit, use his body, and that just wasn't working in this game. So I think it painted him in a pretty bad light to go out like that, just because it was all of his weaknesses, like a summation of that in probably the last 2 minutes of his college career, which is unfortunate. But I don't think that really changed our opinion on him too much.
No, probably not. And I would guess, like, with Bridges, that we're going to get another year to at least evaluate him a bit further. Like, I don't think you have to get your own thoughts on him, like, completely out now, because he's probably not going to declare, I will guess. Like, especially with the way they went out, like, I'm going to, like, pencil him in for next season. So at least I don't feel as worried about, like, having to make a call if I want him. Like, still, I think value-wise, he's a good and solid guy that you can select somewhere in the top 15 or even, like, top 20 for sure. And that's enough, probably, to just feel safe enough with him. But, like, I don't think we even have to make that call. Just to go to another guy that actually haven't ended his career yet, but, like, he's doing the opposite as Josh Hart has done. Like, I think with Hart, people have become a bit, like, more tired about him, like, just because he's been on this player of the year candidacy all year long, and like, people just get tired of hearing his name. Like, with Thornwell, I think, like, he's been the SEC player of the year and all that, but like, people are not as aware with him, and like, he's been a little bit underrated there. I think he has showcases his, like, the best and the worst from his abilities in these two games. I was kind of impressed with his decision making as well. Like, I think it's something we touched with Bridges, but like, he really gets to know, like, whenever, like, in this game against Duke, when he had a guard on him, he was always trying to get to this mid-post area where he can actually body guys up and go closer to the rim and get fouled. Like, he has a really good feel for that. Like, he, whenever he had Tatum or Allen on him, he always did that. And whenever he had, when he had Allen or Kennard, when he had Tatum, he always, like, sifted a little bit through the perimeter and actually tried to go through his motions and get a little bit to the rim using his dribble. I'm not as impressed. I don't think he can actually get to the rim at the next level using his dribble. I don't think he's a guy that is going to be able to just create that way. But like, I think as a guy that is a complementary piece that can actually quarterback your defense, because he's really vocal there and he actually can move guys and things like that, that was really impressive to see. And a guy that puts a lot of effort there, has the frame to actually probably defend like two positions, I would guess. Like, I think that's doable for him. And I think the mix of skills, if the shooting is translatable and you're believing on that, the percentages have gone up considerably this year from three especially. If you are buying that, I think he's a really interesting profile as a role player from that two or three position, where he can actually body up some smaller guards or smaller wings and just try to be a spot up guy against bigger guys that he can't actually beat through the dribble motions.
Yeah, he really impressed me from like a 3-and-D perspective. I think like what you hit on with the creation issues were spot on. The first thing that jumped out to me was just his aggression on the offensive glass. Like, his bounce there is just insane. Yeah. Like, that guy relentlessly attacks the glass. And he does a lot of little things like that on closeouts. His acceleration getting there is just remarkable. He just really tries defensively, and it's pretty obvious. The shooting for me is really intriguing. He doesn't get a lot of elevation, pretty simple mechanics, but it seems like he's pretty deadly when his shoulders are square. Like, if he's off balance, he's not as effective, but if he can, like, even set up off the dribble in a straight line and all his body is geared toward the basket, he seems like he's a good shooter. And, like, he was a confident shooter, too. Like, he was taking some pull-up threes. He had a couple catch-and-shoot threes. So if he can shoot, you're not going to get a lot of handle with him. He's more upright. Like, we can compare and contrast him with his teammate, Dozier, who's a little bit more shifty. He's bigger, has better ball skills. I think he can change speeds. Thormo's not really the change speed guy. Like, he's more just like, he's going to bully you. He's going to take you in the post, like you said. He can do like an upright spin move, but for the most part, I'm not sure how well it's going to translate to like a pick and roll setting, because he's not like super shifty there. But I think he can pass on the move. He can pass out of the post, and he's a really, really high effort defender. Not like a supremely good laterally. He's pretty good laterally. It's more the effort, the length, and the strength. That combination makes him above average. And so if you get a guy that can shoot, he can defend a couple of positions, and he has active hands, he's physical, covers a lot of ground, you can do a lot with that.
No, he's a tough guy. Like, I think he beats you to your spot. Like, he's a guy that anticipates well. That's where I thought mainly. Like, it's not like he's like the most athletic guy in the world. Like, he's not going to be able to stay up with like athletic guards, or I don't see him like really bodying up like leading point guards and things like that are going to just beat him through dribbles. But like, I think he gets like to like the spots really well off ball. I think he's a guy that is smart enough to do that, and tough when he is there. Like, he's going to body you up there for sure, and he has the strength. So like, that's something to notice for sure. And I think that like, people are a bit worried with his statistical profile just because he wasn't as efficient during his first 3 years. I think he was always like this bully guard. Like, he's always been like physical and a big guy in terms of like his physique. I think that's nothing new. Just like, he's probably maturing in terms of using his tools. And as well, like, I think he was a volume shooter from three even earlier on. Like, he was not as efficient. Like, he hit 37% during his freshman year. He just couldn't finish otherwise in terms of like near the rim. But like, he's always been a guy that gets to the free throw line a little bit, at least during all these years. He jumped it to like a much higher rate this year, like from, I think it was 40% or 40, in the 40% realm during his first 3 years at South Carolina. Now he's near 60% in terms of free throw rate. But like, his statistical profile is really interesting, because if you go through the advanced numbers, like box plus minus, like, there are six guys, since these statistics has been there at Sports Reference since 2011, I think it is, that has a plus 16 box plus minus plus 700 minutes at least. And those other five are Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, DeLon Wright, Victor Oladipo, and Denzel Valentine. And you go through the numbers, Oladipo is the most comparable one. Actually, if you go for wins, only Oladipo is a guy that has like a similar offensive box plus minus with at least a plus defensive box plus minus as well. Like in terms of being a balanced two-way player, like, that's something interesting as well. And I think like the offensive one for Thornwell jumped pretty severely this year, and it has a lot to do with the free throw rate and his percentage going up from three. But like, if you buy a little bit of the three, at least with, like you said, in terms of like being a guy that can make deuce off ball if he gets his shoulders square up and all that, and if you buy that he's able to, at least if he gets the ball in that mid post area and is able to like get his shot in some post-ups a little bit going out, and also like getting some free throws if he's able to body up like smaller guys. Like, he did that to Kennard several times, and Kennard is going to probably be in the NBA as a backup, so if like he gets paired up with some backups, he's going to be able to do that at times. I'm not as optimistic as that going to happen regularly, but like, I think there is a venue for him to be a really good 3-and-D prospect, even if he doesn't have that elite athletic ability. Like, I think some people were thinking when they watched him, and I kind of thought it was a good idea, a good comparison, especially with the ability to play in the post, a little bit of Wes Matthews. I don't know what you think about that one, but like, I thought it was a little bit spot on. Like, probably Matthews is even stronger, and he developed his shooting a bit more in the NBA, but like, I think that's not that far-fetched. Probably he's not going to be as good in terms of diversity of his shooting and off-ball ability as Matthews, but like, something in that range, right? Like, that's something we're going to look at. Not like, not a on ball creator, more like a a role player there.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's really the key. I want to go back and watch more, see how he can shoot off screens, if he's more adept at that, because that's just not something I saw a lot of in this. Defensively,
no, for sure.
He really shut down Kennard for the most part. I mean, I thought his positioning off ball was a little, he got a little too cavalier at times. Like, he would help way too far, one pass away off Kennard. And Kennard's obviously a knockdown shooter. You can't do that. But for the most part, like, Tatum didn't take advantage of him. Kennard didn't, outside of Tatum beating him at the very last minute. I think there was like a post-up where he shook him pretty quickly. But outside of that, I was impressed with his, you know, his matchup-wise against Duke. Like, like you said, he posted up Kennard. He showed the ability to generate some kind of, you know, value on ball outside of just the spot-up shooting. And he seems like a leader, like you said. Like, he coordinates the defense. He's always he's always talking, and that's something that's really important. If you're like a role guy, if you're a high effort guy, he seems like a high intangibles guy, really coachable and stuff like that. So just throwing that out there, I think he will be a value pick. This is somebody I have not seen before this tournament, and he blew me away. It's just being like a legitimate. I think he's like at least a late first round pick right now. Like, just his.
Yeah, I watched him only two times before. So, like, I watched the Alabama game where he had this ridiculous stat line. I had to watch that after I saw that. And I watched another game early in the season. But, like, I think I saw him more during his freshman year because he was, like, highly regarded out of high school. And he was supposed to be, like, a really good shooter. So I watched a couple times then. And then I didn't really, like, after that, when he was not really all that efficient, I didn't really follow him all that much because South Carolina never had all that much talent either way. But, like, when he came back, and, like, I just completely forgot about him kind of like the last 2 years. Like, that was part of it.
Yeah, and I guess the transition, well, speaking of guys that I haven't seen before, we can talk about the SMU guys. Unfortunately, they're out of the tournament. This is a team that I really liked. I had them beating Duke, unfortunately. So
yeah, I had it too, yeah.
Yeah, so that didn't work out too well, but we can talk about these guys pretty, we can go pretty in-depth, I guess. Shake Milton, first of all. I've seen him once before, I should say. Kind of a 3-and-D kind of lead guard. I think his passing is a little bit too cavalier at times, but he tries on defense, and he's a really good spot-up shooter who has really deep range. So when you couple that with plus height, plus length, and the ability to shoot and try on defense, you have something to work with. What do you think?
Yeah, like, I was not as, like, I seen him a couple of times before against different type of defenses. Like, USC was really solid defensively. Like, they were really good in transition, and I think they were really, like, solid off half court as well. Like, he couldn't really beat anybody off the dribble. I thought it was impressive that he didn't really get beat in his dribble moves or anything. Like, he didn't really risk it either that much, and that was maybe a reason. But, like, he got McLaughlin on him. That's a really small guard that can actually probably bother him because Milton is about 6'6", and McLaughlin might be like 5'11", something like that. So those jitterbugs and fast guards normally get to bother bigger wings in terms of like their dribble. I don't think Milton lost the ball once. I think he was, I will have to check it out, but like, I thought he was really safe with the ball, and that was impressive from his size. I just didn't really see that much shake, actually. Like, that was part of it. But I seen that in other games, so I don't really know if that's something that we could project at the next level. But like you said, he looked more of a 3-and-D, especially in the clutch. Like, he was really hitting big shots. I thought that was impressive, even off the dribble at times. He looked kind of okay defensively. I thought he was more of a, like, looked more of a role-playing guard than a main, like, on-ball leader in terms of creating for other players. But I have seen that at times with him. But I think that's really, like, a skill that they have really diversified in SMU offense. Like, they do that through Sterling Brown at times, through Ojeleye in the mid post. Like, they don't really have like a guy that just runs the offense, so it's not something that I was expecting to see all that much. But still, like, I think he's more of a, like you said, like a situational guy that could be like a 3-and-D type. I like his range. Like, he's a rangy guy. Like, he can move side to side. I like his athleticism a bit. He's not probably as athletic as a guy like Dozier or something like that, but like, he seems like a more in-control guy with his dribbles. I was kind of, like, not impressed, but, like, okay with his role-playing potential. Like, he's another guy that probably will come back, I will guess. He's only a sophomore. But, like, just, yeah, something to work there. I think I need to see him more. I saw more of him last year just because he was a newcomer. And this year, at early in the season, he was disappointing a little bit statistically, so I was not really checking all that much into him. But, yeah, definitely, like, a guy that we should follow a little bit closer, I will guess.
Yeah, and he had some intriguing shots off the dribble. It's going to come down to really how well can he defend the point of attack. I really feel like that is going to be his calling card. He's got to bring that defensive ability to guard quicker guards to pair with his shooting. If he can do that, I think there might be a future for him. I agree with you. I think he's probably going to come back. But let's move on to Ajelele, somebody that we have pretty overlapping opinions on, even though we didn't have them at the same time. This guy is built like a freaking icebox. Like, he's so strong. But he's really upright. He's really rigid. Not a lot of flexibility. You can see the smooth mechanics off the shot. Not a ton of lift, but again, easy mechanics, easy shot. A little bit flat. He can get you in the mid-post area. He has a couple of mid-post fadeaways he can do. He can pass from a standstill. But defensively in this game against USC, this is really where he lost me. Guarded by Boatwright most of the time. He was guarding Boatwright most of the time. And Boatwright would just elevate right over him. Finishing, he just didn't have the explosive ability retreating or the length to really contest Boatwright. And a couple of times, Boatwright just went right around him. So, I mean, I'm looking at his ability at the next level. Like, what is he going to do? A backup four? Who's he going to defend? What do you think?
Yeah, he's not going to defend anybody, I think, other than some force that want to operate in the post. Like, he's strong enough to hold himself there. It's just like vertically, he's like, it's weird because he's a really good athlete vertically on the offensive end when he actually decides to go up and go high. Like, he can do that. But like on offense, like, I thought he couldn't really elevate mass. Either guys that were smaller go, like, when they were going over him or going against him in mid-air, they were able to just extend and finish over him. And when he was trying to defend anybody just facing up, like, he was not able to just contain anybody because he's really tight around the hips. Like, he doesn't really turn sides well. Like, he seems really, like, non-flexible at all. And that was, like, a bit of a concern. I think he's just strong enough to defend some guys at the post, but, like, that's pretty much it. I don't even know if you are going to be able to live with him against some playmaking force off the dribble. Like, I don't think he can contain those. And then offensively, like, yeah, he's able to shoot the ball, like, even in isolations. Like, I think he can get his shot off certainly good enough. I think he has that touch for sure. Like, his numbers going back to high school were really good shooting the ball. Like, I think that was there always. But, like, he lacks a little bit of toughness at times. Like, I think he could do more in terms of, like, going down and going to work close to the basket, but, like, he never does that much in terms of, like, bodying up guys in the post or anything like that. Like, just even guys like Bentil that serves a little bit of, like, similar profile in terms of just being a gunner that doesn't have much defensively. I think he's a better prospect than Bentil, but, like, used to illustrate some people about him. Like, I think Bentil even did some of that, like, close to the basket. And in terms of Ojolegele translating, like, I thought, like, he lacked that type of, like he got kind of kicked out of Duke a little bit in terms of minutes before. Like, he didn't get all the playing time he wanted, and that was why he transferred to SMU. And that was because Coach K wanted him to just battle and play the four and just did that full time. And he didn't want to do all that. Like, he thrifted to the perimeter way too often. And I think he still does that at times at SMU. Like, he's a bit more disciplined in terms of, like, at least in the rebounding aspect. I think he got hard enough in this game. But, like, for me, it's just, like, he's a bit too one-dimensional offensively to be a translatable player. So I think I have him lower than both Milton and Sterling Brown from SMU if he decided to come out this year. He has another year of eligibility if he wants to. So that's my main takeaway, like, from this guy for this year, at least.
Yeah, if he was better laterally, I think I would like him more. Yeah. If he could defend the perimeter, I completely agree with you. He's conceptually, he's a guy that would play down a position, have the strength to anchor inside on the post, and then be able to guard the perimeter well. But he can't guard the perimeter well, from what I've seen. I'll go back and watch more of it. Boatwright was going right around him at will, pretty much, multiple times. And he's just not, he doesn't have that flexibility in his hips to really flip. And so when you pair that, and I think he's just more of a power guy. He's the power guy around the rim. He's not a lot of touch. He's just going to go in there. He's going to try to dunk on people. He's explosive off two in space. But there's a lot of guys in the league that are explosive off two in space. It's like, do you have enough craft? Do you have enough facilitation as far as for others on the move to really play make or convert at the rim? And I just didn't see all that package there in order to get, like, really high on him. Like I said, I think I'm much higher on Sterling Brown, who I think fills an NBA role better. So why don't you talk about him?
Yeah, like, I think with Brown, with the guys we'll be talking about, like Hart, Thornwell and all that, he's the guy that has more shake out of those guys. Like, he's really strong but has a really good body control, and I think, like, he has a better handle as well. Like, he really can go side to side. Like, he's not a guy that is going to go north to south all that often, but I think he can create a little bit of a space for himself just going sideways, and he has that type of, like, all man's game, kind of. Like, he has that type of old school style when you watch him. Like, even, like, watching the long sleeve t-shirt, like, that reminds you a little bit of that a little bit as well. And, like, he's a knockdown shooter for the most part. Like, his numbers have been really solid through his career. Like, he's always been there after his freshman season at SMU, like, really good numbers shooting also from the free throw line, even if he doesn't have many attempts. But like, I don't really think he has like much in terms of explosivity to go to the rim. But like, he has the ability to just like play around people, like play a little bit on pick and rolls, create a little bit of the dribble. I think he has like a diverse skill set that is really interesting. And then defensively, he's versatile. Like as I said, like he's really strong. He has like a really big frame and all that. Like he's long and big. I think he can play in both wing spots at points. So he's like a really intriguing guy. I think he's a bit of a jack of all trades, master of none as well. Like we talked with Jackson to another degree. So that's a bit concerning because role players sometimes don't translate all that well from the NCAA level. But like if he can get his shooting off ball just completely reliable at the next level, I think there is a role for him for sure.
Yeah, this combination of frame, like the build is phenomenal. When you pair that with the shooting, that's what immediately was alluring about him. High release with great range, catches on the hop most of the time, can make shots off pin downs. You know, he doesn't have a great first step to attack closeouts, but like you said, he has a little bit of shake. He has a little bit of handle. I'm not sure if that's going to translate to like tight spaces, but maybe in big spaces he can do a little bit there. He can post mismatches too. Like he took a couple guys inside. You could see him drive against somebody like DeAnthony Melton. He just ran right through him because he's so strong. So when you couple that with the versatility on D, not terrifically quick, but he's quick enough to where he can use his length and he can use his body most of the time. I think he could be one of the steals of the drafts because you could plug him in and say, this guy feels like a projectable role. Like, I don't think he's like Anthony Brown from Stanford, the guy that was just pretty much a shooter, you know, much narrower frame, but like, couldn't do anything off the floor. I think Brown actually has a little bit of a floor game that'll help him. He has decent feel. So maybe, like, this is a guy that's probably going to go late second round, maybe even undrafted. And I think he could literally fill a role in an NBA roster.
Yeah, to that point, maybe his agent would prefer him to be undrafted anyway. So yeah, that could happen, actually. Like, it could happen that he just gets a deal afterwards. I think he's an interesting guy just because how well he translates if you are going to just put him and plug him in an offense where he can actually do all those things and he's not asked to just create all that much. Like, they couldn't really beat down anybody off the dribble from the USC team in terms of like just going to the basket. Like, they didn't really have all those many drives. So like, that was not something that you would expect at the next level. But like you said, and like, he has that floor game to be able to just move around guys a little bit to just stem plays at least. I don't really know if he's going to get all the way to the rim at any point, but like, at least just extend plays, avoid a turnover, like just be able to just make some passes in terms of like, if he the offense move around him and like guys get some type of like space at one point, like I think he's able to read all those moves at least. So that's something there that you can work with for sure. And I think he's even higher than Milton for me, and probably he's not. I would guess Milton is maybe not declaring, so maybe only Brown is in the draft because he's the only senior from these three. But like, I would guess he might go undrafted, right? Like, that's something where you can actually project some value there if he's undrafted, used to sign him as an undrafted free agent and try him off. Like, I think that's something that could really work out for you. But as well, we were high on Robert Carter Jr. last year and he hasn't done anything just yet. So like, you never know with these things, like with these borderline prospects that are just more of senior older players that are actually going to be just a role player at the next level, and it's more difficult to actually project. But like, I think there is something there. I have to watch more tape, especially of the shooting. Like, that's something I want to get a good feel about, because he doesn't have all those many attempts, especially from the first three years at SMU, even when he was playing a ton. And like, he doesn't have all that much of a sample size either from the free throw line. Like, he's not a guy that gets there that often. So you want to really go through the mechanics and get a good feel for that. But like, other than that, I think the rest of the profile is really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think he would be my favorite out of the SMU guys as well. And now a word from today's sponsor, GlassesUSA.com. It's still uncharacteristically cold here in the Pacific Northwest for early March, with snow even on the forecast this week. And if you've been to Seattle, you know that most people can't drive in such a climate. But boating season is right around the corner for me, which means it's almost time to restock on sunglasses. Personally, I'm a big Ray-Bans guy. GlassesUSA.com is the most affordable way to purchase quality glasses, including Ray-Bans, of course, online. GlassesUSA.com offers quality prescription glasses at affordable prices that save the customer up to 70% off retail prices. It's a risk-free shopping experience, guys. Free shipping and returns, 365-day 100% warranty, full money-back guarantee. There's also a huge selection of over 2,500 main-style brands from Ray-Ban, Oakley, Tom Ford, Calvin Klein, to Michael Kors. You can select from a variety of frame styles, from full rim to half rim, as well as prescription or non-prescription glasses. GlassesUSA.com online also has cool features like the virtual mirror, where you can upload any picture from Facebook and see how the glasses look on you. GlassesUSA.com supports the What's on Draft podcast and helps keep the podcast free to listeners. But right now it's offering a special promo code. If you enter Almighty at checkout, you can get 55% off any glasses you choose. It's an incredible deal, guys. Again, Almighty at checkout, 55% off any glasses. GlassesUSA.com, the most affordable way to purchase quality glasses online. Let's get back to the show. But I guess to transition to someone who we know is going to be drafted in the lottery instead of being undrafted, yeah. Lauri Markkanen against St. Mary's, which was kind of, for me, was a tale of two halves between pretty bad first half and a pretty good second one. So why don't you take that one away?
Yeah, it was really weird because, I mean, often he shows better mobility than he shows strength. Like, I don't think he's good in terms of awareness. It's something I perceive as well with Mo Wagner from Michigan. I think they have mobility, but they are not that good. Like, Markkanen was awful in the pick and roll in the first half against St. Mary's guards. But then he was really solid, and I think he was the best out of the Arizona bigs against Landale in the post, and being able to just bother him and, like, bothering him up at times. Like, I was really impressed with the physicality he showed there. He got also beaten by him for rebounds at times and things like that, but that's going to happen with Markkanen. Like, he lacks that type of strength in the lower body that's difficult to adjust for anyway. And he didn't really did all that much in terms of, like, long-range shooting. It was more, like, he got to the rim a ton in terms of, like, even attacking closeouts or just get foul at times because St. Mary's defense just overplay him at times, and that was easy for him to just get to the free throw line, where he's terrific. Like, he hit 9 out of 10, and he's always going to be really solid there. So that's an easy way for him to get points efficiently if he's able to get deuce off. But, like, I thought he was pretty much like we expect, other than three-point shooting. But, like, it was impressive to see him, like, at least being physical against a guy like Landale that gets his job done mostly close to the basket. That was there, and that allowed Arizona to play, like, at least a guy like Pinder, that is a smaller guy, next to him and play small at times. Like, they didn't have to play two bigs all the time, and that was something that they needed just to get better offensively, because they were not able to score enough points when they were putting Ristik and Markkanen, or Comanche and Markkanen, at the same time on the game. Like, that was a key point for them.
Yeah,
my
notes were basically what you just said. The toughness and the physicality he showed in the second half in the post against Landale that's the most impressive I've seen him as far as doing big man stuff this year. Like, he contained, like, the initial blows he would take in the post. He could still contest shots. He blocked a couple of them. You know, he was physical boxing out at times. He had that putback dunk. And he just showed a lot of actual big man qualities in that game. We saw the attacking closeouts in the first half, like you noted. A couple of them. Left. Yeah, he got fouled on one going left, and he actually had a left-hand finish. It was pretty nice.
He went all the way to the rim instead of just settling for a pull-up mid-range jumper. So that was kind of impressive, I thought, as well.
Exactly. And then you saw the bad with that, too. He had a couple of attempts. I think he had one attempt when he went to the right, and it was just he had no body control. He kind of just glanced off the backboard. So we don't really know how much the touch is going all the way to the rim. We haven't seen that a lot this year, but at least he showed it with his left. The first half was just really bad as far as the space defense went. Like, he was getting killed on switches and pick and rolls. Had a really ridiculous effort on the right baseline. I think you noted this on Twitter, Javier, was when, like, he didn't come over and help. Like, there was a lot of bad episodes there. I think that people misconstrue his mobility at times. He can move. He can slide maybe once or twice. But if you get him in, like, a change of direction thing, and you start, like, dancing on him, he's not going to be able to stay on guys on switches. And he doesn't have, like, the ability to retreat and either contest vertically or, like, use his length to erase any kind of advantage he gives away. Like, he's not a guy, if you get a half step on him, he can't erase that advantage. And he's not going to be a guy, he's not going to be able to backpedal and then be able to block guys' shots going vertically. So those are the two issues. Like, if you get him in space, I think he's going to be a negative. Maybe he can hard hedge and recover a little bit. He's not, like, super great at recovery. He's not that fast. But maybe he can slide a little bit, one or two, head off the handler. But for the most part, I just thought that outside of maybe that one or two slide defensive billion space, that he left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, like, in more simple matchups, I think he can be okay just because he's mobile. He's like you said, like, he doesn't have the body control, the balance to be able to recover and do things. And I think he also, like, just bites on a lot of, like, fakes or just body moves. Like, he just buys into it way too early and tries to, like, it's like he panics a little bit and just goes through the motions a bit too early always. Just, I think he knows he's not all that solid defensively and tries hard. I do think he's a guy that wants to do well. Like, he's just, he doesn't get there just yet in terms of awareness. I don't know if that's workable or not, but, like, he's not all that there. I think the physique and the toughness there, it was at least encouraging in terms of like being able to do something more against bigger guys, because that's where his bread and butter could be. Like I think like the pick and roll defense is important, but like if he at least can give you something to not get killed against big guys in the post, like you can work him at the five at times. That's something that allows Cleveland and has allowed Phoenix before to play Channing Frye there, because he's kind of solid in the post. So like if he can get there at least, like that's something that could be workable. I think he still needs to add for sure some strength in the lower body, because he still gets beaten down by guys in terms of like boxing out or getting rebounds. So that's something that he still probably has to work on. But like it was encouraging to say the least. And like I said, like the fact that he at least went all the way through his moves to get to the dribble in like the closeouts. I think that was impressive, because many times he just pulls up and like try to get the mid-range going. He wasn't not really like, I mean, Arizona doesn't like to play pick and roll all that much. I think that's something that he can get a much better shot off than just the way they use him in this game. But like he didn't really get those opportunities, so it's hard to fault him from that, because Arizona guards didn't really look for him all that much in that type of setting either way. So it's just, I think Sean Miller never liked that all that much during his career either way. So unless they are running only a pick and pop with him, he's not really getting those many opportunities out of those settings. So just difficult to see that. And then if we're moving to like another like two high heralded big men, just at least in terms of Zach Collins for sure, and with Isaac a bit more of a combo guy. But like I think both of them had a bit of a weird performance. Like with Collins, it was like a bit of a tale of two halves as well. Like he was really dominant against Northwestern in the second half, but like I think at least we got the vibe through these two games that he's probably the best option Gonzaga has in either of these games to get at least to the Final Four, just because of his ability to stay in front of guys and be able to be a factor in the open court athletically. Like he's a guy that gets hit the wrong running really quickly in terms of like going in transition, and Gonzaga wants to make the most out of those opportunities just to showcase the athleticism, because in the mid-court, when they are playing two bigs, they don't really get all that much spacing. So I think that was impressive for him, and he was also really good in terms of like verticality and showcasing his length at the rim. Like he was a force there against the Northwestern guys, and he blocked a ton of shots there. I think he was really good defensively there, and I think he probably is the best option they have out down there for sure.
Absolutely. He gives them a completely different element than Karnowski as far as mobility and rim protection. He was really great rim protection outside of that one obvious goaltending, but he was still like good instincts and stuff like that. Showed great verticality, the ability to block shots with either hand. I was kind of impressed with his post play in this game. You haven't seen a lot of that because he's not a great passer out of it. And, you know, he doesn't have the most dominating frame, but he showed some nice footwork. He had a really nice drop step. And I don't think he needs to be special here. He's not going to be, he's a finisher. He's a pick and roll, pick and pop finisher. But if guys just switch the 1-5 and he can't like take advantage of mismatches, that's a huge problem, because that's you have to be able to do that. You have to, in the NBA, you have to at least be able to beat mismatches in the post. And I think that he showed the ability, the footwork to do so. The problem is,
I think the touch is real at least. He has like some touch there. Like he's able to finish. He finished even through two guys at once. Like they were not big guys, as of course, like Northwestern doesn't have those big guys that can actually body up a guy like Collins all that much. But like he did well there. Like he never looks to pass. Like that's a problem there, and I think that's another problem that he's showcasing, so roles or situation where he gets the ball and he's not like confident enough to just pick and pop for it. Like he doesn't make a quick decision where he's just shooting out of those settings. Like he just gets in a dicey situation where he either has to just give the ball back quickly or he's going to get forced into a turnover. So like I think that's a bit trickier, and I think I would be much more encouraged if he gets deuce than if he gets the post play lockdown, because as long as he's able to just beat smaller guys in post play, like that's enough probably. But like the short rolls is something that I will really love for him to develop, because it will really add another dimension to his game eventually.
Yeah, if he could pass, and he could pass on the move especially, and make like little reads, and he showed any inclination to do that. Like he just hasn't shown any inclination to do that, and that's what I was looking for from the post. Like you said, finished through contact a couple times, pretty impressive. We know he can lob catch, he's really quick off the floor, he can shoot, he's got great form. Mechanically, I'm buying a shot for sure when you factor in free throws and all that stuff. I think that's maybe not a surefire thing. It's not like marketing, but I think he's a pretty good bet to shoot. So really for me, it comes down to, you know, how good is his base defense, which looks pretty good right now on a college level, at least. We'll get maybe more indicators as the tournament progresses. And can he pass at all? Does he develop any kind of court sense? Because for him, if he can catch on a short roll and he can play make at a 4-on-3 situation, you can put him with like a dynamic lead guard, and that's where he's really going to thrive. He's a finisher for the most part, But those guys like Mason Plumlee playing with Damian Lillard, like how much of a benefit was that if, you know what I mean? If he could make that read on the roll and that really opened up their offense. So if he can do that, you really have like a top 10 talent in this draft, in my opinion. I think that he has those other qualities.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think that's a little bit like difficult to read right now, just because like to his credit as well, like I don't think he's encouraged to do that at all. Like he seems really like non-secure with his decisions there. I don't really think like he's empowered by few to do that. And he's also playing a ton of the four. Like he plays next to, I mean, you can count Jonathan Williams as a five just because in terms of spacing, like if you are playing off a guy, you are going to play off him, not off Collins. So he's going to get a tighter defender either way. And when he's playing with Karnowski, he's for sure a four. So like unless he's playing with Tilly, and those are not many minutes again because Tilly doesn't play all that much and he doesn't get to play with Collins, like maybe half his minutes or something like that. So like he maybe gets to play the five for sure in a well-spaced system for like 6-7 minutes a night maybe of his 21 minutes per game. So like it's not like he gets the best situation for him. Like the spacing with Gonzaga is something really difficult to see unless they are running the floor. Like they have issues offensively in a half-court setting unless they can get a play out of the post with Karnowski or like Nigel Williams-Goss can beat somebody going downhill. So like it's difficult to read him offensively other than as a finisher, and he's really good there. Like his numbers, even out of post plays, like I got that from Chris Stone from the step back because I was tweeting about it and he was like going back at me, and I was just meaning that I didn't see him as a guy that was going to operate there at all, like at least at the next level. Like the volume is not high, but like he has like 1.45 points per position out of the post, which is crazy if you consider that those plays at best get 2 points if you are like hitting on 100% of those. So like he's really efficient even out of post plays. It's just like I don't really see him being a guy that gets there all that often unless he's just like you said, in switching systems, like he gets a small guy on him, right? Like that's pretty much where you want him to go to the post only in those settings, right?
That's really all you need from him. I mean, if he has a mismatch, can he just convert over the top, which is most probably what he's going to be able to do, or can he pass out of it? But to move on to the other guy you mentioned, Jonathan Isaac, I wasn't that impressed with his tape against Xavier. I think that was probably one of his worst games that I've seen. Bad defensive tape for him. Lost off ball consistently, got beat at back door, overhelped at times, beat on closeouts. I do think the ball skills are underrated. I don't think he's going to be anything of like a legitimate creator at the next level, but this guy can shoot off the dribble fluidly. He can pass high-low passes, outlet passes. It's not like really high-level stuff where he's catching on like a pick and pop, like a Josh Jackson blowing to the hoop and passing on the move. That's not the kind of stuff he does. But he shows enough ball skills for me where if his defense is real and the shooting is real, we don't really know. The shooting looks okay. He's got a slower release, and he's been proficient this year, we should say, not elite. I think it might be projectable. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and to the point where I wonder if he's like, I never saw him all that much as a three. I think he can move his feet well, but I think it's something that you want only in a switching situation. You don't want him a slot there at like all times. I wonder if he ever gets there physically and he gets enough strength level, if he's going to be more workable at times as a five, just because his ability to pull up from mid-range or his ability to just hit those transition threes, like he seems really comfortable just catching and moving and doing all those things, even if his motions are not all that quick, like in terms of release. But like he had a couple of these pull-up jumpers from the left side in this game where he felt really comfortable just like going to his game and just a couple dribbles, just pulling up from the mid-range. Like, I don't like when guys just give up a three and do that, but like if the closeout is there and you can actually do that and move a little bit closer and get a cleaner shot, like that's a better shot than a good move from him. And I thought he looked really comfortable with doing that. I just don't know if he's like good enough to just make a pass out of those situations as well. That would be something else if he can do that as well. And like you said, defensively, like I think at times he got like beaten down badly, especially like closing out late on guys and things like that. But like that was something to do with the full court press that Florida State just installed for whatever reason they did. Like whenever it didn't work, like they should just have stopped with that at once. Like they were completely, like Xavier was good enough to beat the press for sure, and they were just getting easy shots all the time using back in the back door of that press and just like with open trees because guys were not able to just close. Like they have a ton of them in that game, but like in that team, but like if you are pressing like all game long, full press, like it's just difficult to get the stamina to just get all that down, even if you have the length. So it was just difficult for him to showcase his ability. I think in a more constrained system is just like something we have seen all year long, where he can actually get into guys, like use like the weak side rim protection is there for me. Like I saw that from the high school tape. I think I'm sold on his instincts there, and his feet are wood enough to at least defend guys in a pinch for sure if he's switching out. And like I think the ideal position for him just to have enough flexibility and versatility on both ends is the four for sure. So like I'm not all that concerned unless you are going to tell me that somebody's going to play him at the three full time.
Yeah, 100%. I think the ideal fit for him is, we talked about this before, Minnesota next to Karl-Anthony Towns. He's a guy that can be efficient, we think, as a spot-up shooter. Occasional guy that can take you off the dribble a little bit, attacking closeouts against fours. But he's a guy that doesn't use a lot of possessions, and he can play elite defense probably at the four spot. Like, he's going to give you that rim protection even at a standstill. And maybe eventually, with how much weight he puts on, he can swing over and play some backup five, because that would be really something to see, just because he's somebody that can grab and go a little bit. He can play in that open court, pull up, make a simple pass. So he can do a lot of things that I don't think he gets enough credit for.
And another good fit that we haven't talked about at all, because it's difficult to see that it happens, but like I was hitting on it with Adam Mares from the Denver Steves, I think is the SB Nation website, and he has a couple podcasts as well. I think he's in the Lock Network and all that. But like I was talking with him about it, like I thought it was a really interesting idea if Denver could trade up and pair him with Jokic, just because he's the type of guy you want next to Jokic, like a guy that can actually defend and switch positions, be able to shoot off ball for sure, and get some creation ability at times, maybe if he has like the right matchup. And I thought that that was a really good one, just to pair up with a guy like Jokic. I think that could be ideal if they can just get that somehow. Like it's a more tricky proposition for them because they are not going to have such a high pick, but like if Isaac slides a little bit and they are able to use straight up somehow, I thought that was a really interesting one as well.
That's a fantastic fit. I hadn't thought of that one before, but that would be definitely worth the investment. And Denver has probably enough draft capital.
They
have enough assets where they could switch a couple of those and move up. And I think that is actually something that they might look to do. But let's go quick fire here at a couple guys that we haven't talked about yet. Cameron Oliver from Nevada. He got knocked out against Iowa State in the first round. This is not somebody that I've seen a whole lot of, but just my initial read on him, really explosive. He's a great athlete vertically. He has that intersection between shooting and shot blocking statistically, which makes him stand out. He can handle a little bit. He had one dribble pull up that was kind of interesting that he knocked down over another big, and he could pass from a standstill. Had some vision. I have my reservations about him laterally as far as how good can he slide. He's mobile. He can run in straight lines, but how good is he laterally? How good are his hips? And then the shooting rawness. He kind of kicks his leg out, gets a lot of elevation. I'm not sure how translatable that is. And the motor and intelligence on D, doesn't run the court hard all the time. And talking to a couple guys, I think that was the main issue with some NBA guys in regards to him, was how hard does his motor burn? How hard does this guy want it? So what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's there when he's about to make a play on the ball, like when he's about to block a shot and all that. Like he has like good instincts there. Like I think he's good in terms of like side, like tracking the ball and be able to make those plays. He's just like, he doesn't have the effort all that time when he's doing otherwise. Like when he's going to be just a guy that has to play the rotations and stay in front of guys, like all those things are more difficult for him. And like you say, he's a bit bulky and all that. Like I think he's not the most flexible guy in the world. I like it shooting using standstill, like not a guy that he's going to shoot on the move all that much. I thought that was okay for him. Like he's an interesting prospect just because if you are going to look for a guy that is able to rebound the ball, like he has good numbers rebounding the ball, especially defensively for a four. And I think for a small ball four, especially like a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit for you and be able to just defend the rim a little bit as well, I think that's okay. Just I wonder about the rotations, right? Like that's part of it. Like with guys like that, that was more one of my concerns with Miles Bridges, who has a better ability to play on ball and a more fluidity for sure. But like with a guy like Bridges, like if you are not sure that he's going to make the rotations, and it's even worse with Oliver, like he's going to be a problem just to slot at the four because of how the league trends right now and has like a ton of guys that are just playmakers there. So like I think he's a workable guy. Like he's at least more my thinking with this tournament, like the guys I haven't seen all that much and trying to compare with each other, like my thinking here is like he's a bit more interesting than Oyelaye for sure. Like I think he showcased more ability there, so I'm going to have him ahead of him if he declares. But like I'm not completely sold just because he's not a clear-cut fit and plug and play type of player. I think he needs a bit of a right environment to develop his ability and be a plus, especially offensively. And I think that's a bit concerning sometimes if you are not ideal role player, and if you are not just good enough to warrant that type of usage. Or like he's a guy that actually plays a ton for Nevada and has a big role. Like, I don't really know how that's going to translate all that well. Like, that's some concerns I have usually, but I'm intrigued, to say the least. I have to go back and watch more tape because I have only seen him twice, I think, before. Once last year and once this year. And he's still showcasing similar issues, like you said, especially defensively and with some of the shooting ability. Like, he has got all his numbers up, like turnovers down, pass going up, like the ability to protect the rim is there from last year. His defensive numbers in terms of rebounding are there. He goes to the rim a bit more. He's shooting the ball better. So everything is trending the right way. I just need to shoot, like, to get a bit more tape and like get it locked down because I can't really make a read just yet on him.
Yeah, from a physical standpoint, he just really stands out, and he brings valuable skills to the table with the ability to space the floor and block shots. It's just, I'm going to be looking more for the intelligent stuff, like you said. He seemed kind of like a loose cannon in the half court as far as his reads that he was making. I'm not sure how good he is there, and the rotations is a really good point. But somebody...
Like, which role you want for him? Like, that's my issue with him. Like, he's not going to play make for you, I will think. And then if he's more in a limited role, like, he really needs to... like get all those rotations and all those off-ball reads and the smart part completely tied up so he can be a solid player for you. So that's, it's more about like how he matures and where, which direction he goes from here. But like, that's always a difficult read to get with young guys like him, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to project him, we have to project him similar. If he's going to be ideally used, it would be similar to Miles Bridges. That would be kind of the archetype that I would look to see. I haven't seen enough of him to know how good his reads are passing. I think Bridges has a pretty good feel, and I don't know if I get the same read from Oliver. So if I do, I think he's very valuable. If not, then there might just be a lot of athletic potential without the mental game to corroborate that. But somebody who is definitely a good mental prospect is Juwan Evans from Oklahoma State. We haven't talked about him too much. We're going to talk about him more when Mark gets on too, because he's got a lot of takes on him as well. But just briefly, against Michigan, you saw the good, incredibly fast with the ball. Maybe not Ty Lawson fast or Kemba Walker as far as burst, but Oklahoma State sets their pick and roll, their screens farther out, and you can just see how much that affects him. He can, with a full head of steam, that guy can get to the rim pretty much whenever he wants to, create shots off the dribble. We also saw the bad, of course, which is the finishing. He lacks both touch and explosion, so I don't know how he's really going to finish at the next level outside of like a crafted floater game, because he doesn't look like athletic enough vertically, and the touch isn't there. Like, if he had better touch and if he could finagle a little bit and like contort his body and more and like for high percentage finishes, I would be higher on his finishing upside, but he doesn't seem to have those things. What do you think?
Yeah, either he gets all the way downhill when he got space to eat and gets like all the way because he can showcase his speed and just be able to beat guys, and then he's able to get a clean look and then he can finish, or he can really finish at all through contact because he's either going to throw a floater and hope it sticks somehow, or just like going to throw wherever he can and hope it sticks somehow and normally it doesn't. So it is difficult. Like, I think... like, it's difficult to project him to be a good finisher just because those opportunities aren't going to be there. He doesn't have the same type of burst or explosivity, as you say, like with comparisons to Lawson or guys like that. I don't think he's that type of an athlete. And I think he lacks the touch as well. So it's more, for me, like, if I'm projecting him, I'm not going to count on that other than, like, open court opportunities. So I'm going to just try to showcase or to tell him or try to project him more as a guy that may be able to do a bit more off ball. Like, I haven't seen all that much. He of course has a really big role for Oklahoma State, and he has to be on ball most of the time because otherwise they are a bit helpless offensively and they need him to make those decisions. So like, I would like him to like have a bit more of a diversified shot so he can make those plays as well, because if you're not going to be able to do all that much creation on ball at the next level, I think you are going to have to play a little bit more of ball, especially if you are projecting him as a starter. I think he needs like an ideal, perfect scenario to be able to start. I don't think it's likely. I think he's better off and probably a much better project if he's just a backup. But like, that's, those guys have a lower ceiling and they're not going to have all that much value in terms of draft position. So like, if he wants to be a starter, I think he has to work on his shot and getting his shot off quicker, getting his shot off screens. Like, they don't really run him off those settings all that much. I don't know if he's capable of doing that at the NBA level. And then I think he has a really interesting ability at playing pick and roll, but like, he has to have that pull-up jumper completely tight down to be able to create a space for himself, because he's not going to beat guys off the dribble all that much. Where I like, he has the patience to just stop, make decisions in like small spaces and things like that. Like, he has that type of ability to just go around, make reads, go again, set another screen, like just do all that. Like he has all that feel tied down. Like I think that's good for him. Like I think he shows much more creation ability there than guys like DJ Augustin or Trey Burke showed at this level. And that's something that is important because we have seen how those guys have had issues to run offenses and from the bench at the next level. I think he's at least going to be a really good backup guy. And there are not all those many backup point guards at the next level. Like they are situational guys, guys that can play a role, guys that can play with the starters, things like that. But guys that can sustain an offense by themselves for like 12, 15 minutes, there are not all those many guys at the next level. And I think he could be capable of doing that if he gets the shooting going a bit more. But I also think he doesn't have the flexibility size-wise to play all that much with the starters unless you have a really big point guard starting for you. So that's another knock on him if you are trying to project him as a starter somehow at the next level.
Yeah, I've always thought of him as a high-level backup, a high-capable pick-and-roll guy that can come in and he can score. And that's what you want from your backup point guard. You want a guy that can come in and generate baskets, generate offense, preferably in short periods of time, like push the pace. This is something that he can do. And like you said, I think it's going to be largely contended on his off-the-dribble shooting, which in college has been pretty good. I mean, efficiency-wise, coupled with extremely high volume for off-the-dribble shooting. So I think that might be projectable. He's going to need that extra space, but against reserves, that becomes more tenable. So we'll see. I think that he has a nice package to where he can impact an offense in a very short amount of time. It's just a question of how do you value that compared to a guy like Monte Morris, who is a better decision maker, but doesn't have the athleticism and the scoring acumen, you know?
Yeah, I think I would value Evans ahead of Morris for sure, just because, like, I think he has, like, the speed not down for sure, and I think he can create more in the open court, and then I think he has more of a pick-and-roll patience. Like, I have, like, a better feel for his game in terms of creation ability of the dribble than I do for Morris. And just, like, the other thing, like, just be able to get some shots off. I think he's a better scorer for sure than Morris is. So sometimes you want to put pressure on the defense somehow with that. And I think you can play off Morris a little bit more than with Evans for sure.
I totally agree. I look for scoring more for backups. And it's not like Evans has bad vision. He has good vision. It's just maybe not quite.
Yeah, he has. Like, I don't know if you watch all that much. Like, I watch for sure a lot of Trey Burke at the college level for my own demise because I was a bit too high on him. But, like, I for sure remember, like, I think Burke didn't have the same level of patience and the same level of creation in the pick-and-roll setting. Like, I think Michigan had ideal spacing for him, for sure, and that helped him a ton. But, like, he didn't have the same type of feel that I think Evan does have. Like, it's not like Evans is Chris Paul, but, like, I do think he has, like, a high-level vision there and a high-level feel for just a stop in a dime. Like you said, he has the pull-up in terms of efficiency really high, but, like, I think he has the ability to just make those reads for sure, and that's encouraging just because from a backup, like, you're going to play him in pick and roll all the time and just run easy settings, so that's something that is to be commended just because he's going to be put in those situations at all times at the next level.
Definitely.
Just how valuable you think a backup is, but, like, other than that, I think that's for sure something he has in his pocket.
And that's my absolute, that's my overarching thing, is how to value that as a backup, as a really good backup too. Like, how do you value that in the draft? Probably late first round, it depends on who declares, but I guess
I think we touched on some interesting stuff with bigs in that regard, like how to value a big if he's going to be a backup, where it's more useful. And I think for a point guard, the only knock I have on him is, like, he's not all that flexible in terms of playing more than one position, so you are not going to be able to slot him with the starters all that often, and that's a bit of a knock, just because you want sometimes a guy that you can mismatch with the starters, at least with your backcourt, and I don't really know if you can do that unless you have, like, a really versatile starter already in place.
Yeah, I definitely agree with all that. I guess let's move into just, I'm going to go over some rapid-fire observations, Javier. You just chime in whenever you want to, just about playing games and just really briefly a couple of the mainstay guys. We're going to talk about more this next upcoming week. But just wanted to hit on some guys. John Collins versus USC. He was really productive in that game, but most of his production came in transition or on, like, some kind of post-ups. He still didn't show the ability to space the floor or pass. And I thought his interior defense was horrid. He got moved around at will. He was out of position the entire time, not a rim protector. So it was kind of, we've both voiced our concerns about his production being overvalued when they're not really translatable skills. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think I like his athleticism a bit more, especially on the open court, like you said. I think he's a guy that he's long enough and has a good feel around the basket. He can play and get off pick and roll settings where he's going to be able to just be faster than some fives and be able to finish around the rim just because of the length. So I think he's going to be a capable scorer. I just don't know if there is anything else than that going for him. So he's going to be like a guy that has a really defined niche probably at the next level, even with his level of production.
Yeah, and for me, maybe he's a backup, like energy four. I just don't trust him as in like a five defensive role now. Just seeing him in that game, it was just like he's too light. the instincts aren't there. So another guy in that same...
And you need good spacing as well around him to be able to just showcase that ability he has around the rim and going against guys like that. So
definitely. And then another guy, Kansas State, Iwindu, somebody I haven't seen a whole lot of. He's an intriguing combination of size and ball skills. That's the first thing that stuck out to me. Like, he has pretty decent feel. Not a lot of burst or explosion, but he can handle and pass. How well can he shoot it? And how well can he defend? I wasn't really that impressed with his space defense. What are your thoughts on him briefly?
Yeah, like I think he's a bit bigger at least, or feels bigger than the guys we'll be talking about, like Sterling Brown or Thornwell especially, but I think his shooting is definitely not the same level. I think he might be a better playmaker, but like, other than that, I think he's a bit more athletic than those guys, but like, the shooting is going to be a key for him, and his numbers are a bit all over the place, so I think it's just difficult to translate or to see the translation going unless he's like a really good shooter at one point at the next level, right? Like, that's part of it as well.
Definitely. Two more games to touch on really quick. With Kentucky against Wichita State, not a ton to say about Fox. I thought that, you know, I haven't been that impressed with his finishing with his right hand. He doesn't go to it that often. He did once in this game, which is kind of impressive, but there was a possession, I think, like a couple before that where he went left going to his right and they got blocked. I think it was McDuffie that blocked him. So that's something to look for. He's obviously incredibly fast. His elite burst to get into the lane. I just haven't seen a lot of like ambidexterity from him. I know he can do it at times, but if he's going to finish with his left going right, even if you're that athletic, he's not explosive enough to really get over that hump against NBA rim protection. So that's something to look out for. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and it's also the frame. Like, he's not able to finish through contact just because like he doesn't have that completely up to the level that he needs at the next level. Like, I think his numbers are a bit confusing because he's supposed to be 6'3". I think he's probably up to 6'4 in shoes, most likely. But like, he has a 190 pounds frame, supposedly, but he feels like smaller than that. Or like, he's a wiry guy for sure, but like, he's not like, I don't feel like I trust him good enough just going to the rim all the time to be able to get his offense off, just because I don't think he's going to be able to finish against contact all that often. And then like, the issue with him is like, you are going to have to play all those screens like closer to the basket just to be able to get some space in terms of like the pull-up, just because his three-point shot is just not there. So like, it's just difficult to project him creating anything unless he's able to play in transition at all times. And I don't really like his feel all that much in the mid-court as well. I know people are really valuing his passing ability. I think he's a good passer. I just don't like his feel for an offense just creating all the time in a half-court setting. I think it's difficult with the Kentucky offense as well. Like, it's not like the ideal situation for him either, even with Monk next to him. I think they lack spacing all across the roster where Malik Monk, incredible shot-making ability. So it's just tricky. Like, it's a guy that if I don't have a good feel for, he's just going to be knocked down in my board just because of the concerns for the archetype and the position, for sure.
Absolutely. I'm in lockstep with all that. Not much to say about Monk in this game. He's pretty quiet, guarded by Brown a lot. He had that nice block to end the game. We showed some good lateral agility and then contested, but I think we'll see much more from him this upcoming week. Briefly, talk about Ball against Cincinnati. Really quiet first half. He did have one dribble penetration move where he was upright, but he still finished. Showed some decent creativity on that. I still don't think he bends well at all. So it really just comes down to, you know, Cincinnati didn't have like a really tall guy playing center at that point. I think with better rim protection and better length, he's not going to be able to get that off. But he blew the game open in the second half with his transition playmaking, deep threes. People keep letting him get to that step back to the left three. You just can't let him do that. Like, you have to shade him right. I know even if he's going to drive, I think you have to do that and try to wall him off and recover, but they keep doing it and he keeps hitting them. So I don't know. Did you watch that game?
Yeah, I did. I watched only the second half. Like, I've been watching halves of some games just because they overlap each other kind of, but like, I didn't get a good feel for the game. Like, I think it happened with this game and others. Like, some of these teams, they really lack a rim protector guy, like just next to the rim. Like, he's playing like 6'8", 6'9", guys that don't have all much going for them in terms of like blocking shots. So it's just difficult to get a feel for how difficult it is to go to the rim, how difficult it is to finish around the basket. So it's just like, I think I will have a better feel against Kentucky, and we'll see if he gets to like Final Four. But like, if they get to play some of the other teams there, especially if they get to play Gonzaga in the final or something like that against a guy like Zach Collins, that could be a good matchup eventually. But like, I think I'm more like locked down into that 6-16 game against the backcourt from the Wildcats. Like, that could be a really good one, especially since we have that like that one earlier on during the year.
Yeah, and speaking, that's probably the best transition in the entire show to end on just some previews for this week. UCLA, Kentucky, that's where it starts with Fox and Ball. Last time they played, Ball had six turnovers, struggled against Fox's ball pressure, full court, and then didn't really attack mismatches much. Remember, like, he was, like, pretty deferential when it comes to, like, attacking Bam, even, like, Willis at times. So it's reprieve time for him. Like, Ball can answer a lot of questions for me. This is probably the number one game for me for his entire season. I'm not going to put overly too much stock in it, of course, but just I feel like I am going to weigh it slightly higher just because we're going to get better answers as far as finishing over more length. How much can he create against Fox, even though Fox projects to be an above average NBA league guard defender? So I think he's going to answer some creation questions here.
Yeah, that's a good one. And also, like, it depends in, like, at on which guy is going to guard him at all times. Like, I guess they will switch between Fox and Briscoe probably. But, like, if Monk can showcase Sam there as well, like, that's something to watch. And especially Monk against some of the UCLA shooters, like, his defense of ball, like, I think that's interesting to track. And as well, I think Bam defense against, like, a guy like Wells that can stress the floor a little bit, hit shots from mid-range, hit shots even from three at times, like, I think there are, like, good matchups all over the floor in this game, even if it's just, like, two, like, minor prospects that could be in the NBA at one point. So that's something to probably see. I am kind of looking forward as well, even if in a minor level, to UNC Butler, just to see Josh Jackson against some NBA level players in Kellen Martin or even like some small guys that Butler has defensively that can bother people. I think it's a good game for him to showcase some ability even defensively. Like, Kellen Martin is a good gunner, like a guy that is going to make shots at all times and just be able to get his shot off ball. He has like a big body and he has a sweet touch from deep. So like, I think that's a good game to track Justin Jackson. And just going again like to another interesting one, like, I think the Kansas Purdue is probably the second biggest matchup in terms of NBA prospects, just because the Swanigan Josh Jackson matchup, right? Like, that's the next one you will focus on probably.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see the trade-off of who Josh is going to guard, probably Vince Edwards but if Purdue goes big in the front court, which I don't know if they're going to be able to do that against all Kansas's playmaking, but if they do put Haas in at center and go Swanigan, we'll see if Josh can hold his own in the post against Swanigan. I don't think it's going to happen, but yeah.
I think it all depends on how much Swanigan can leave and play off Jackson, right? Because you are not going to play off SV probably, like, you are going to get an open three all over, but like, I think it all depends on how much Jackson can punish those mismatches. I will guess Purdue will try that at the beginning, and if they get a bad result, they will probably switch to Haas or Swanigan at the 5 and Edwards at the 4. But to start with, I guess they should try, just because if Josh has an off night from 3, like, you can always live with that matchup somehow. So like, we'll see with that, especially having a big guy like Haas in the middle, like, they can actually bother Jackson going to the rim if he's able to just blow by Swanigan at times.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we see more of that off the dribble shooting from Josh again. Maybe he settles for that mid-range jumper. Yeah. We see some of that, you know, pull-up ability that he showed against Michigan State. I guess the last one for me that I find intriguing is Zach Collins against West Virginia front court, just because it's not a huge front court, but it's a pretty athletic team that presses. We'll see how he does. I'm just interested in watching everything I can about him, just in case he declares. We talked about this earlier in detail, so I won't go into it, but just the passing and like just how he finishes against any kind of length is going to be valuable information.
Yeah, another small matchup there is Jevon Carter against the Gonzaga guards, like either Williams Goss or like Josh Perkins. I think that's an interesting and solid one, just because there are like similar level prospects in my mind, Williams Goss and Jevon Carter, and I think that could be an interesting minor matchup for the second round if both of them declare. And just to finish, I think the Oregon-Michigan could be like a really interesting game just because of the scoring level that could be there. And like, they play a really interesting brand of basketball, both teams. So I think that's a good one to follow, just because of, and like, just if you are going to get your mind a bit too sick of watching like bad basketball at times, that's a good one to just detox yourself and watch some off-ball play and actually like passes and plays of the dribble and things like that that you cannot see with other matchups at this level. And I like some of the guys from Oregon. Like, I think Tyler Dorsey has been on a tier lately, like hitting a lot of threes. And I think that's going to be a trend in this game because Michigan doesn't play all that much defense either way. And Mo Wagner is a guy that probably won't declare, but I think he's intriguing at least as a third big and a guy that is going to be mainly an offensive-based player. But like, he showcased a ton of stuff, both like especially against Louisville in the second half, but like, he showed a lot of feel and a lot of ability to just make shots both close to the basket with good footwork and just ability to stretch the floor at times. So I think that's a good one to follow and have a role player to maybe get a better feel for future
years. Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to possibly Oregon, Kansas, and seeing Brooks go against Jackson. I know that, like, Brooks isn't like the supreme athlete, but he's pretty clever. And just to see them at that matchup at the four would be interesting. And then taking that to the next level, we have all wanted to see Gonzaga, Arizona, that Larry Market and Zach Collins potential matchup in certain instances. I think that'll be really valuable.
Yeah, I wanted to watch Duke, SMU or Duke against Villanova just because Tatum had like a really good matchup there, both against guys like Oyelaye or Michael Bridges or even Sterling Brown, like guys that can defend him in different ways. We saw him against Thornwell and that was okay, I guess, but I would have loved to watch Duke a bit more just because you can get a better feel for Tatum, which is a guy that you have to get locked down for this year and get a good feel for where you think he can go in the top. But like other than that, I think we touch on most of the most interesting matchups. I think it's going to be interesting to get a feel for those guys that, like you said, Dillon Brooks, even Justin Jackson, just because I tend to value those guys that can do more things offensively, even if their defensive translation is a bit iffier, over guys like Oyelaye or like more one-dimensional guys offensively, even if they have like more of a athleticism or physique level that they might be able to do a bit more on defense. But like I don't like as much just because they don't have the IQ or the ability to create on offense. So I think getting to see those guys at least is interesting for that, like, late first, early second range if you value wings over other guys in terms of upside.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a good place to wrap it up here. We've gone a little bit longer than we thought we were going to. We don't know when we're going to be back next week. I feel like we should probably wait it out again to see all the matchups of the weekend, just because obviously this last week, Sundays were the best matchups. And if we talked Sunday morning, we would miss out on that. And we want to kind of capitalize on that immediate reaction for the market. So yeah, do you have anything to plug, Javier?
Yeah, well, I recorded, I don't even know when it's going to be out. I recorded with Sean Derenthal last Saturday. We went through a bunch of topics like draft philosophy, draft value, and we went deep in Josh Jackson and Jason Tatum. We're two guys that couldn't really talk here all that much, just because like the two episodes we talk about then I couldn't be a part of. So like I got the opportunity from Sean and really thank him for doing that for me. It was a really interesting one to go through. We talk a little bit towards the end about Isaiah Hartenstein, the German big, and Rodion Skuruc, the Latvian from Barcelona, and just went through all those guys a little bit in depth. And it was a really interesting one. I don't really know when it will go off, but like it's from the O2Odem podcast from the Almighty Baller Network. Be sure to check it out. Like Sean does a really good job as well. So that's a good one to get if you have time eventually.
Yeah, and I've actually recorded a podcast with Sean too. It was about
two and a half
weeks ago about more of the 2018-2019 draft classes and why we like those so much. I don't know when he's going to post that. I would assume it'd probably be sometime this week. So keep an eye out for that. I'm probably going to do a breakdown on Tyler Lydon for the step back this week because he just declared for the draft pretty much. So go over his skill set. Thinking about doing a Josh Jackson versus Miles Bridges breakdown, but it's already been done by like four different sites, so we'll see if I do it or not, but be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, that's a good one as well. Okay, well, let's hope to have Mark next week and go through the rest of the games when they go, and just see you again on a week or so, I guess, and we'll post these up as quick as possible.
For sure, and as always, guys, thanks for listening, and if you can give us an iTunes review, if it's good, please do so. 5 stars helps.
Yeah.
And if you have any questions, of course, always reach out to us. What's on Draft Pod on Twitter? Reach out to us, and we'll try to answer some questions. So thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye.